And we're talking about the use of our time. I spent a little time on this schedule we gave out yesterday. Does everyone have one of those, by the way? Anyone need one? I figured out just with the basics of what I think I'm supposed to be doing. I figured 77 and a half hours. That did not leave time for some other things that I think were crucial. I didn't put anything down for transacting personal business, any time for friends outside the church, or any. I put down 1 hour for everything under number four. So what I'm going to do is to type this up in real nice shape and send it to the personnel committee. Did anybody have any time to think about this at all and have any thoughts or suggestions? One thing I was wondering about was if there were some other things that we should share about the way you use your time as a youth minister, that this might help someone else if they work on this later to know a little better how to evaluate this. Has anyone thought of some other activities that should be listed here? Or any?
Well, like in number 7?
Yes.
Number 2, that's unusual for all
that's for us. Right, I agree. Certainly is. Just like down there, number 6, under that number 7, time involved in teaching and preaching and leading worship. Well, that's a pretty big item for me. I have 3 regular services a week. I do a radio program, which is a 4th. Well, I don't think I got my radio program on here, by the way. So I agree with that. That should be divided down, I think, in 3 or 4 categories. How many of y'all are working with church training programs in your church? That's interesting. And that takes some time, I'm sure, with your youth activities there. And that's, of course, this was done by a Presbyterian, so naturally there wouldn't be any training program on here. How many of you are working with some kind of a summer camp? Our camping, weekday camping program, something like that. You spend any time with that in the summer? Okay. You found that a very profitable experience, I'm sure. All right. Some of the things I could not schedule, like even this meeting this week, you know, you can't see how you would block that out. You just have to change the schedule some that week. I think it'd be helpful for you really to go through this sometime and see where you're spending your time and where your emphasis is. I figured number 1 and 2 in my schedule took 38 hours studying and praying. I really tried to give a good portion of my time to preparing my messages. I'm going to give a quote tonight in one of my in the seminar I have. I picked up from R.G. Lee. He said that you can't drink skim milk all week and give cream on Sunday. And he was simply saying, if you're going to be creative, if you're going to be useful of God, you've got to take time to prepare. And so, any other comments you'd like to make on this particular balanced life of this schedule? Okay?
We talked about a little yesterday, but they say when they take 3 hours a day, eating, bathing, dressing, shaving, all that. Now, I mean, I don't think my life is really practical. If I'm cooking all my meals, cleaning dishes, and stuff like that, it runs into a lot more time than 3 hours a day.
Okay, I agree. if you get a wife, you may spend more time than that. certainly, and well, that 56 hours sleep, for example. How many of you get at least eight hours of sleep every night? Raise your hand. Okay, I'm not negating that at all. That's great if you can. I think that I get by pretty well on 7 hours of sleep a night. And, from everything I can read about your health, that some people can get by. I mean, it's not anything bad on your health if you can live on 5 hours of sleep a night, if your system can tolerate it. Is that right? There's no reason why you need 8 hours of sleep, unless some people just have to have it. I mean, It's not a rule that you got to stay in bathing aisles to be healthy. Okay.
The book I read on sleep too said that every hour of sleep you get before midnight is worth two after. I don't know why that would have anything to do with it, but that was just what I said.
Okay. All right. Any other comments on time? All right.
Everything on this sheet happens every week in my ministry. Should you put all that that's like these denomination things? I don't know if it's every week or
yeah.
I don't ever speak to the local civic organization, anything like that. Would that be lumped in miscellaneous?
I think you could. I combined some of those on quite a few of these. I combined on mine really when I was working through it. But you say you think you'd find some of that. You do some of all this every week? Is that what you said?
No, I don't do.
Oh, I misunderstood.
So I was wondering, if there were, sometimes I don't even spend an hour a week counseling people. Sometimes some weeks just aren't.
Yeah.
Shaking. I don't have it blocked out.
Yeah. I try to average that out. I did it well on funerals and weddings, for example. I have about 25 or 30 weddings a year. I would think, an average of a funeral a week. Sometimes I have two funerals a week because I'll go a week, but I think I would average at least a funeral a week. So that takes a pretty big block of time. In my concept of my ministry, I really try to give a lot of time to people in crisis situations, funerals, or weddings, I would call a crisis situation. you can see why our family's always laughing, because they always laughing at something I'm saying. I never get it right. But in a funeral, for example, I go immediately when there's a death and try to minister. And I'll go back a second time to help them try to plan the service. I'll go a third time when the family usually goes to the funeral home for a first viewing. Many times I'll go a fourth time when they have their last viewing, and of course I conduct the service. So I give a lot of time to a family with a death. I spend at least one conference of an hour with a couple, premarital conference, and that's not nearly enough. They need three or four conferences, really. But I don't have time to do that. But then I spend an evening with them, usually in the rehearsal, an evening with them in the wedding. It takes a lot of time for weddings. But I really don't feel like that's a waste of time. I try to use that really in cultivating people. I take weddings of people who don't have a church, simply trying to use this as an evangelistic outreach. So I don't feel like I'm wasting time in either one of these ministries.
One thing that's a small item looks like under his plan here, under his sheet, that I spend a lot of time planning. I'm a minister of music and youth, and I've just recently been convicted about planning music far in advance. And so I spend maybe one whole afternoon, or even as much as one whole day, planning my music for this, and rehearsals and planning rehearsals, and we have several different music groups going.
Right.
We have to spend that time playing.
Right. I think that would certainly need to be written down here as a part of your definite schedule, somewhat like I put down 24 hours a week for sermon preparation. That would be some. That would be one of your main thrusts. That's the thing that I have the most time on my schedule here.
Dr. Price, you mentioned the other day that when you use the telephone, in terms of things that can take your time, you said that sometimes you'll do a death call by phone, and then you're just saying about funerals. Now, what would in your mind be the kind of death from within your church family that you would just make a telephone call?
Okay, I make a telephone call if you're a member of my church, and you're a brother or your sister. Or your grandmother, any kind of a death message that's related to me, where there's been a death in your family, I try to at least make a phone call. Now, if it's your mother, and it depends somewhat on the family situation too. But maybe it was your mother. I try to do more. I try to come by your house, just make a quick visit before you go off to wherever you go. Maybe use it if it's a mother that's out of town somewhere. But at least I touch base by telephone. But of course, the person is a member of our church, and I have the responsibility for the service, as where I was talking about these other calls.
Dr. Price, could you share with us, you mentioned about, you know, the block of time that you spend in items number one and number two, and the statement of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Can you relate to us how you build these in your day? What time?
Right. I try to get to the church about 4 to 8. Our secretarial staff comes in at 8. They work from 8 to 5. But I try to get there before anybody else does. And I try to get up to my little study up on the fourth floor. I have a study up on the fourth floor of the education building where I do most of my work. I have an office down on the first floor. And I try to get up there by 8 o'clock before, unless it's something I need to leave word to the secretary. And then I go up there and spend at least 2 hours or 2 hours and a half. Unless I get a call now. There's no phone up there. The only reason the girls would disturb me is this emergency. If it's a death or what they think is an emergency long-distance call, they have to come up 4 flights of steps to get me, so they don't come very often. I mean, that's just it's natural. But they don't want to disturb me. And I think the church family has been pretty well educated to the fact that I'm up there for the first 2 or 2.5 hours. Would you say that's true, Al, that most folks know that unless there's some emergency? I've noticed in the last year or two, when I used to come downstairs, there'd be 4 or 5 notes on my door. People called about this or that or the other. But I don't find that much now. I think the church has come to the place where they know where I am. I don't know what the secretary says at the phone. Do you know what she says, Al? I think she says that maybe he's in the building, but he's not available to the phone just now. So I mean, can I take the message? And really, a lot of times she can solve the problem without having even to bother me in the first place. So I take, as far as the study is concerned, I take that, and a good portion of that is my devotional time. I try to spend at least an hour and a half of my devotional time. I don't try to measure that time wise, just whatever the need is. Then I start doing a little study on my sermons. If I go downstairs and don't find anything pressing, I come back upstairs and spend the rest of the morning studying. I try to give pretty well the morning to study. Then afternoon, visitation and some study. And I do some studying at night. I have a study at home. And when I'm at home, I do 2 or 3 hours study every night. My wife enjoys reading, studying. We don't watch television, so it works out very well for us. She has a Bible class on Thursday morning where she studies about as much as I study. So it works out nicely for us. We can study together. So the book of this time is studying in the morning with my devotional time and then some study with the remnants left over. And I do this pretty well Monday through Friday. On Saturday, I stay at home and study. Saturday's a real busy day for me. I study in the mornings, go to the hospital, use some emergency calls that have to be made, and many times I have a wedding on Saturday.
In that same reference, have you in the past or do you now ever have a time where you and your wife kind of study together? Just kind of, you know, you give an insight to her and then she gives insights to you.
We share quite a bit. She does a lot of reading, a lot of studying, a lot of listening to tapes. She gives me a lot of good helps. Really, it's been wonderful the last 2 or 3 years since the kids are up and grown that she's had the time to give to study. She does a lot of studying and reading and shares a lot of things with me. We listen to some tapes together, and she shares with me. My wife likes to talk about, you know, where she is and what she's learning and what she's studying. And she's really strengthened and encouraged and deepened my spiritual life. We don't have it set up on any structured time, especially. I think we need to build up on that at that point. Any other comments on the schedule of time? One other thing I felt was important. Let me get you all to give this out. I'm trying to finish up on this balanced life. I don't know whether you've ever seen this religious education code or not. I'll let everybody pass it out and then I'll see if you're familiar with it. I thought this was a good summary of a balance. All of you familiar with this? How many of you know have seen this? Raise your hand so I know where I'm coming from. Well, good. I'm glad this is new to you. This was a code that was prepared by a group of ministers of education and ministers of music. Our minister of education, Mel Anderson, was a part of this. They have a Southern Baptist religious education group. I've forgotten the exact name of it, but they meet once, twice a year. And they had a committee studying relationships of staff and responsibilities of staff. And out of that, they devised this code. And I think at the first sentence there, as a worker in the field of religious education, well, you could put it in youth or more specific in music, however it is, I acknowledge and publicly declare my commitment to the following statement of principles relating to the gospel ministry through religious education or through youth, a youth director ministry. First, it relates to your calling. And before I say this, let me say, I've reviewed this with our staff a number of times. I pass it out at a staff retreat and we'll go over just to keep our commitments clear. We have a staff retreat three times a year where we'll take off the day, the ministers plus the secretaries and our hostess and our building engineer are the ones who take off the day, and I try to share with them something in depth or something right about our work as a staff. And I've done this several times to just go over this with them so we all know where we are. First, your calling. I am a servant of the Lord Jesus Christ, called of God to the gospel ministry. My life is committed to the doing of the will of God. My mission is to serve God by serving His people through religious education. Now, if you want to stop anywhere and comment on this, you just speak out. Do you like that statement? My mission is to serve God by serving His people through religious education, through youth work. I believe that God calls individuals to specific places of service. I will be guided by this conviction throughout my ministry. That gets hard sometimes for us, but I think that's what we have to believe. Two, my place of service. I accept my position as a place of trust and as an opportunity for service. Two, I pledge Christian love to those with whom I serve. Three, I believe that the church is a divinely ordained fellowship. I dedicate myself to sustain this high and holy fellowship. Four, I purpose through the ministry of religious education to meet the needs of persons, to win the lost, develop Christian personality, and help equip believers for their work in the church and in the world. That's a pretty clear statement, I think, isn't it? To meet the needs of persons, to win the lost, to develop Christian personality, or character, if you please, and equip these believers for their work. Three, my fraternal relationships. I see the church staff as an expression of the New Testament concept of the division of responsibility and labor. I believe that denominational vocational service is an extension of the principle also. Two, I recognize the pastor as the senior minister of a local church. And I wouldn't want that put there if they didn't have the next one there. I understand that staff members minister with the pastor in a team effort to carry out the eternal purposes of God. I think those two have to go together. I say to my staff, we are a team. God's called you to youth work. God's called you to educational work. God's called you to music. God's called me to preach. But we are a team. And I say often to my staff, we didn't have this man out here as our building engineer. keeping the building warm and the lights on, we wouldn't have a church. I try to impress upon our staff, every person is invited. The secretaries are important. Just as important, they have a task God called to, and I believe the four secretaries we have feel a sense of calling to their task. Don't you think that's too out? That these girls feel like God's put them here. It's where they're fulfilling their calling. Every team has to have a leader, and I think the New Testament indicates that the pastor would be the key leader or the captain of the team, but certainly not a boss in the sense of a dictator. I may have gone too far on being soft, but I have had so many experiences with pastors that I think are just dictators that if I'm going to err, I'd rather err on the soft side rather than on the hard side. But are we all on the same level as team concept? Is that a valid concept? Is that true where you're working pretty well?
How does it affect if you're pastorless?
Beg your pardon?
How would it affect you if you're pastorless?
Well, the next man in line, our particular church.
You got two.
Both of them left.
Beg your pardon?
The next man in line left too.
That's pretty well the way we operate. That I'm away this week, and I think the church looks pretty well to our business administrator and educational director as the next man until they get a new captain of the team.
In other words, you're saying if a pastor leaves a church to go to another church, and if the man below him were to leave, then the next called man of God on the staff, as far as where you were basing it on seniority or whatever, we should then at least assume the responsibilities until the Lord leads the church to do otherwise?
I think the church would have to make some designation here, but I think that would be the way the church would designate it. Mm-hmm. I know that when Jim Temples was our youth director on one occasion, and we lost the education director, he went off for a year, went down to Al's hometown of Forest and Lake, and came back to assume again the responsibility. But the year they waited, the church asked Jim to be the education director. That he just took this responsibility and had added responsibilities because of this vacancy. I think the church would be the authority here. Barry?
How do you think that the situation, I think particularly with the youth director, you can look at the stationery and with our name on the bottom of the stationery, that usually indicates something about the church's attitude there a lot of times. I'd just like you to kind of comment on that, and maybe how some of these guys can handle that in terms of, in fact, I was dealing with a couple of situations like that where people just didn't feel like that they were really a part of the staff. The church had hired them to kind of babysit the kids, and they weren't mature enough to really enter into the staff situation, or which really is kind of ridiculous if, God can call people to youth ministry as well as other things. So I'd just like for you to comment on that.
Well, I suppose it would be up to the pastor to somewhat try to say to the church, look, we're a team. That's what I try to say to our people. We're a team. That Al is our youth minister, and Mel is our educational director in these areas, but we're a team. There are several factors that enter this. One is longevity. Someone has been there a long time, has a more established fit. Usually a youth minister is a younger person and hasn't been as long on the team. Would be one reason I would think that if people would try to relate the youth minister down at the bottom of the line. And, that, of course, that makes a difference salary-wise sometimes, too, in a sense. But I would think as time goes along that well, there's not a whole lot of variation. Al and our salaries now, isn't it?
Not very much.
And Al has just been there 2 years, and our minister of music has been there 10, our education director has been there 11. So if there's, anything in terms of the longer you stay on the job, the more salary increments you would get. But I would think that it would be pulled up. I think in the long run, your second man, in our case, our business administrator, he carries a double role of business and education director. The very bulk of the work that he carries, the responsibility he carries, might mean the salary might be a little bit more. I think there's a danger of the pastor's salary being so much higher than the rest of the team that that would kill the team spirit.
Do you think it would enhance the team spirit if belonging pastor, everybody else is designated as associate pastor?
It would probably help. Good point. But there again, the only thing is you've got usually one or two people have been there a lot longer than the others. And it always makes it difficult when you bring in another man, and the man has been here 10 years, and you bring in another man who may just be out of the seminary, so to speak, and put him at the same salary level as you put a man that's been there 10 years. I don't know what the answers are finally on salaries. I really don't staff salaries. You may want to make a comment here, but I think it's a valid point of discussion. I do think many youth ministers have been underpaid through the years. I will say that. Especially ladies. I think some churches have had the concept, well, it takes, let's say, $12,000, $13,000 to even, talk in terms of a youth director, but you can get a woman for.
It's interesting. It's interesting, though, but that statement seems to be true, but did you know on the overall statistic that I read that really surprised me was that most pastors are paid less than music ministers, music and youth accommodation.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, the reason for that is that there's a lot of part-time pastors.
Real small churches.
Real small churches, right.
That's
the only staff person. But over the whole broad scope of things, I was real brave and stupid at the same time. I walked up to the church and said, whatever you think is all right, you just pay me that. Forget it.
What's your word, huh?
Yeah. No.
Because you've been having a part of the church, in the church worship service.
Yes.
I think that helps because it gets exposure to the whole congregation, the team concept. Because that's most of the time that's what they see. That's the running out of business.
You may want to come on that a little bit.
I think one thing that I really had to work through as a youth minister is the ego thing. A lot of times the people look at you as some kind of kid, and you're babysitting other kids. I really had to get through that. I had trouble with people that looked at me as, and I suppose I am a kid in many ways, and I won't stay that way. But, I had people look at me and talk to me like I was a little child at times. I wanted, your ego starts getting all upset and it really hurts you. And I want to tell him, what war did you fought by? I feel like I've done 10 times, probably more than most people 50 years old has. But I'm still a kid. I'll admit that. But I don't like to be treated like one. And that's what I have to go through. And I'm happy being the low man on the totem pole as far as that goes. I'd just like to stay there.
Well, I do think we would you say we did try to have the team concept?
Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Where each man has his own role to fill. I think that there's just some responsibility in the church that just maybe more demanding of time and responsibility, and therefore there could be a slight variation in this. But I don't, and again, I guess you sort of measure it in terms of salary, and I don't believe there's a whole lot of difference in salary at that point. Do you have a question?
Yes, I was going to add that I think the whole matter of the team concept depends upon the pastor.
I agree with that.
I've worked with two pastors that, I've gotten the opportunity to preach pretty often, do hospital visiting, that kind of thing, but I've looked from the outside in on some situation. Some pastors are very insecure in their position, and because of that, the youth minister is seen as a threat. And I've counseled friends just to, to support, verbally from the pulpit or wherever, whenever he can, that pastor, so that he sees you as little a threat as possible, that you love him and really want to make him a successful pastor.
I think to put him on the roster, I'm sure Al gets a little tired, though, just having the prayers and maybe a small part in the service, but at least he sits there next to me every Sunday morning. And But I think this is important. I think any way you can to identify this man as called of God. Al shares a hospital visitation, which I think is another area where a man can begin to plug in before the people see that he's a minister, not just a babysitter's idea.
Okay. I'm a youth and recreation director, and I know for the first 2 years all they thought I could do is dribble a basketball, and then they weren't too sure about that. and plus, what's also been something to look at is there's six on our staff, and three of the men are at least old enough to be my father or are older than my father is. And so for a long time, I think I didn't see any response in this way, and I don't have a part in the service, in the worship service, but I think as the Lord was bearing fruit in through the discipleship in adults' lives and adult leadership's lives, it didn't matter to me whether I had a part in the worship service, but as they saw things happen in other people's lives, you know, as a result of things like discipleship, then I think it changes the church's attitude, and they'll develop a team concept after that.
Right.
That's developed.
I think another thing that will help here is that if you're not ordained, it seems that in the minds of many people in the congregation, if a man is ordained, this raises his stature. Let me put it this way. How many of you are not ordained? Raise your hand. Let me see. Not ordained. All right. That's good. Let's see about half of us. Okay.
If staff members are ordained, they get health allowance
and currency. Yeah, right. That's correct. But I think my thinking about, we ordained our minister of music, I mean our minister of education, since he's been there, because I felt like it would give him more of a sense of being a minister. Not that ordination has all that to do with it, but in the eyes of the people, it helps him to see that. All right, okay, Bill?
Along the same concept, the team concept, if you're a part of the church staff and you're not included in the staff meetings per se, you can confront the pastor, pray, all of the above, none of the above.
Bill, I don't know. I certainly do a lot of praying about it. I would try to, I think, patiently try to work through this thing, but if it didn't work out after a while, I think I'd say that that's not where I'm supposed to be. Because I really feel like that you need at least to be on the general basic planning. Or that's worse than being out the bottom of the stationery. what I want to do, I want to take the questions, but I want to get through this code because there's some things I think that are really important here for us. We got stopped there, and I'm not being negative there. I appreciate you stopping us, but I want to, on 2 and 3, talk about the team concept, but 4, I pledge myself to grow in my ability to work in harmony and love with my associates. Our tasks may be different, may differ in kind, but their ultimate purposes are the same. Quote, we are laborers together with God, end of quote. 5, I recognize the interdependence of all who serve Christ and his kingdom, and I need to pray for each other. 6, I believe in and will support my denomination, its purpose, and program. Now, 4 is where I want us to be sure we touch base this morning. My personal conduct. 1, I will be a good steward of my time, energy, and financial resources, and will strive at all times to live within my income. Now, I've heard a lot of discussion at this point with staff members of difficulties at this point. 2, I recognize my need for spiritual growth and will seek to develop my devotional life accordingly. 3, I will be diligent in reading and studying so that I may develop and maintain sufficient resources to give adequate guidance to those with whom I work. 4, I will endeavor to keep physically and emotionally fit for my work. 5, I will be fair to my family and will give them the time and consideration to which they are entitled. 6, I believe in the dignity and worth of the individual. I will seek to be Christ-like in my personal attitudes toward all people. 7, I will strive to be Christian in all my community and citizenship responsibilities. I just feel like that some good guidelines here that you ought to keep this and review it from time to time. It's a kind of a commitment that you really have made to the Lord. And some of these things, I think, are helpful to review from time to time. All right, now we can get back to some questions.
I'd like to ask a question. We're talking about staff, but this is kind of another aspect of it. My pastor and myself have noticed a definite over ever since I've been there and before. He had three. There were three on the staff, and then I came, and the church has grown a little bit, and there's still only two because two of them left, and I came, and then there was only two. And we've been really burdened about what God wanted us to do about getting another staff member, and I was wondering if you had any criteria about the number of staff to the number of people in the church and how that grew, or how you base it, knowing that it can be tremendously flexible because of the certain situations. Because there's churches here that are smaller than ours that have twice as many staff members as ours. Then on the other hand, you know, I feel as though we're understaffed. So what do you have any idea about how to develop a balance there?
I think that there are a lot of factors involved here. Basically, I think a financial factor. I mean, some churches are strapped with debt, and some churches just simply don't have the material resources of others.
Of course, they were supporting three before, and now they're only two, so I don't think that's a big hassle.
Right. The vision of the pastor, I think, has a lot to do with it also. There's so many factors, I wouldn't know how to answer that just offhand. But I've always said this, that any staff member pays his way. If a staff member is really doing his job, if you want to put it in terms of business, he'll create enough business to pay for his work. I mean, if he's doing his job, he'll create enough interest in people and will be reaching out to people. I think that you could add three or four staff members, and if they were really doing the job, that the finances would not be the problem.
You know, too, if you have like a few staff members, they're really doing the job, you need more and more staff members because the church grows and you have more individual needs.
That's very good.
Mm-hmm. Another question along with that, like for instance, I have, as a pastor and then myself, Minister of Music and Youth, we have very little, if any, educational direction. And this has a tremendous negative effect on my ministry because there's not really any geared education program. Our Sunday school director is not really trained and doesn't know how to handle all this, the aspects of that. And I was wondering, what do you feel as though the minister of music and youth in the church of 1200 is a busy fellow, but he doesn't need to take on the responsibility of education, too.
Oh, so what are you?
The minister of music and youth.
Well, you don't, you don't need to be education director, too.
Oh, my goodness, no.
All right. Well, you decide, I mean, in a situation like that, you need another person at least to do the education work.
Right.
I want to ask you a question. A third assignment to me for this period was to talk about the development of your devotional life. I say that for last because I thought that it would be an outgrowth of these other two sessions. And the reason, I suppose, that they did this, the ones who planned the meeting, was that all of you were perhaps with us last year when we discussed Acts and prayer for two or three days, and I talked about your daily devotional life. And my question is this: are you working at it? Can you block off down here on this timesheet an hour a day, 30 minutes a day? Are you really making this prominent in your life? To me, that's what it's all about. You've got to cultivate that spiritual life day by day. And if you don't cultivate that spiritual life day by day where the power of God is reigning in you, you're going to just be going through a lot of motions out there. And so this is really important, and I don't mean to put that and tack that on the very end, but I just wanted to raise a question with you at that point. What I wanted to do at this period was to talk to you about some new things that I've been discovering in prayer. Because, you see, I'm still on the journey myself. I, Our meeting last year, I discovered this book. Peter Lloyd came up to me the first night after. He had been 30 minutes. He started talking about his prayer notebook. And I already had me a prayer notebook, and I thought I had it all worked out. But Peter gave me this, and I decided to try it. And I finally incorporated a number of my things into Peter's book. How many of you have this? Okay, I tell you one of the finest things in this book, two or three features I like. One is that on those daily sheets, you have some ready-made materials to help you worship and praise. Now, I find that the difficult part of my prayer life is expressing adoration and praise. And those sheets on his daily dividers have some excellent material. You just really read through those, and it helps you express praise and worship and adoration. Another thing that I have found helpful, it helped me to sort out all these different people for whom I was praying. You have on Tuesday, you're praying for the lost. On Wednesday, you're praying for the nation. On Thursday, you're praying for church, the church situation. On Friday, you're praying for mission. Well, that helps you at least sort these things out, and I think that's helpful. And one other thing that's helpful in here is this section, this little sheet, How I Learned to Pray for the Lost. Have you really studied that? Have you mastered it? There's some principles here that are really important. Spiritual warfare is what it's all about. I'm trying to learn this. I haven't learned it all, but this opened some whole new vistas for me. You know, it's a strange thing. I'm going to quit with this. I was going to preach on prayer sometime back last winter, and I went to my sermon incubator to see what I had on prayer. I have what I call a sermon incubator. I put a bunch of files and boxes, and I find something on a subject I think I might preach on today. I put it in a sermon incubator. And I just keep collecting material on that. So I went to this on prayer, and I found a little tract that someone had given me years gone by. I just slipped it in there like I slip everything else. I pulled that out, and within the next day, I was reading Jack Taylor's book much more. And Jack Taylor has this, How I Learned to Pray for the Lost, in much more, quoted verbatim. And that was exactly what that little tract was about. And then I get my Peter Lloyd book, and there it is, three times in 1 week, this from different sources. I said, Lord, I think you're trying to say something to me. And I've tried to learn these principles, and they're great. I condensed them down to 6 points, but I won't take time to do that. Thank you. You've been a great group. It's over time, and people stand out there ready for you to go eat. God bless you and your ministry, and I love you, everyone.